Sebastian is excused. Thomas Boynton is excused. Judy Diversa is excused. Greg Pagan.
Here.
David Flanagan is excused. Richard Gonzalez.
Here.
Marshall Hyatt Harvey. Glenn Harvey.
Here.
T. Pena is excused. Marilyn Newman is excused. Dick Verduin is excused. We do not have a chair, Mr. Corn. We do not have a forum, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll have to put off our motion to adopt the agenda. So we can have a vote of consensus, where those of us that are here to follow the items on the proposed agenda. We'll put off the minutes until next month. When we bring up the minutes for next month, I think that it should reflect the conversation that we had at the end of the meeting that Myron Ewan brought up, which was about the audio recordings. So I recommend that the minutes reflect that discussion. He asked some questions and perhaps then put it on the next agenda for an explanation, unless you'd like to do that today.
Yeah, so Myron and I corresponded by email, and I wanted to give you the rest of you a report. It's a policy of the MPO board. It's not required by state or federal regulation that we record the minutes, but the MPO board does want the audio recordings to be made publicly available. So we apologize for not making you aware that your voices were being broadcast to the world via our website. I don't think we're getting a whole lot of traffic on the site. But we do think that it allows us to provide concise minutes and then refer to discussions that ensued basically with that sentence. So if you're curious and you want to hear the content of the discussion, you can go pull the audio from the website. But we think that's a good combination of record keeping, and that's the board's position at this point. So I know Myra doesn't love that as an outcome, but I wanted to share that response with all of you.
Appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Comments from the chair. I think I just made my comments. CAC liaison's report.
I'm going to take that today because, as I stated, Luke Lambert got married this past Saturday, so he's on his honeymoon.
Let the minutes reflect our congratulations to Luke.
Yes.
His bride.
So,
Jill.
Yes.
I think it's Jill.
Yes.
Jillian.
Yes.
Jillian.
Yes.
Jillian.
Jill.
Yeah, Jill. She got.
Yeah, she did.
So anyway,
another
item, we had sent out our first email newsletter and was curious to know if you all had received that.
Yes.
Yes? All three?
Yes.
That's great. So if you have any comments, suggestions, corrections, additions, please let us know. Melissa put that together, and if you have anything to add, I'm sure she'll take your comments. Another item is we have a new employee, Ms. Margarita Cortez. She joined the MPO on February 8th. She is our new secretary, so we all want to welcome her. She's a great addition to our staff. And I believe that's the end of my comments.
And Margarita will be the administrative person assigned to the CAC.
Okay, great.
Emails without coming from.
Yes.
Margarita Cortez, yes.
You get 100 emails a day, you see the name real quick, and you're going through it,
yeah.
So which one prioritizes it.
Yeah, yeah.
It throws you off sometimes, or me. Okay, general public comments. Are there any members of the public that are here today that wish to speak? Seeing none, won't make the comments about the comment card, etc. Action items. Item 2A, the Unified Planning Work Program.
Tom's report, kind of cross that out.
Okay. Yeah. Last meeting, I mentioned that there's a possibility that the CAC was under the Ethics Commission's authority. I have been investigating since that, and I have finally received the list of who is and who's not under the Ethics Commission. Now, my understanding is there's two classifications. One is classifications that are required to be under the Ethics Commission. The second group is ones that the BCC has decided should be under the Ethics Commission rules. The MPO, the TAC, the CAC, Bicycle Greenways Pedestrian Advisory Committee, Transportation Disadvantaged Local Coordinating Board are not currently under the Ethics Committee rules.
The Palm Beach County Ethics Ordinance
Commission.
Yeah. Yeah, right. The Ethics Commission and the regulations established in that ordinance.
Correct.
I agree.
All right. And where we found this was the person who creates the agenda, who's part of creating the agenda for the BCC, because that person is keeping track of what groups are or are not subject to the Ethics Committee's rules.
And just for the record, should be is not the same as is.
Correct.
So the MPO and its advisory committees are not subject to the county's Ethics Commission or its ordinance. Regardless of what anybody thinks they should be, they're not.
Right. At this time.
All right.
Because if the BCC at their next meeting decides that they should be, they can make a vote and make them subject to the Ethics Commission.
I think it would have to be an ordinance amendment.
It may be, but what I'm saying,
they just could, a non-agenda vote.
Well, whatever.
But yeah, I agree.
So what I'm saying is, as of July 15, 2015, we are not currently subject to the Ethics Committee's rules. Now, what I was told was that if you are a county employee, you are subject to those rules because you're a county employee.
Yep.
If you're an employee of the MPO, then you are not.
That
doesn't apply.
The nuance is not relevant at this time because all of the MPO staff are county employees. So we all have to comply, but you guys as advisory committees do not.
Correct.
So can we let the minutes reflect that staff has made that determination to us? So it's not on one's shoulders as practicing law today or rules?
So, yeah, you can make that. I don't mind putting my name to it and say we have informed you that we do not believe the advisory committees are subject to the ordinance. I don't have the authority to say you are or you're not. If you want a formal binding opinion, you have to ask the ethics commissioner to render an informal binding opinion. We haven't done that. If you want me to do that, we can.
I don't think it's necessary.
But I just can't say with authority in the minutes that my opinion is the final word.
Rather than based on the research that we have.
Yeah.
Members of this committee.
I feel very comfortable with the outcome, but I just want you to know we'll have to word it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think what we're trying to say in the minutes is that we have taken the initiative to research it through a member of the committee and a member of staff. It appears that we are not subject to it, so we will be moving forward based on that.
As of today.
Yes.
Sounds good.
And it's in the minutes, and everybody can read it. That's part of the committee, since we don't have a forum today.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Okay. Back to item 2A, unified planning work.
program, the UPWP. I have a short presentation, just going to discuss some of the purpose and background, the framework of the document, but really we're here today to share with you how to have input into the document, to seek any questions you have today. You'll have a couple month period that will be open to provide comment on the website. Document needs to be adopted in June by the board because it goes into effect on July 1 as the existing UPWP expires on June 30th. The UPWP is part of the federal planning process. This process, you now receive federal funds, and with federal funds comes required process and documents. Your 20-year document is your long-range transportation plan, and that's the core planning document. That document is implemented through a five-year transportation plan where the actual projects from the 20-year plan are funded, and every year, year one is built, and then through the year, you're building your new fifth year. It's a continuous process. The UPWP is the two-year program for your planning activities, and basically it identifies all the work that these great people are going to do and how they can hire us. It's the document that they use to invoice to the federal government. They have to show that they have sort of a business plan on what their activities are for the next 2 years. At a minimum, the document needs to identify the category of work, who's doing the work, a cost, and then an estimated time frame for a completed product. The core of the document is the work program section. And that section identifies five types of activities that we've categorized all of the work that the MPO does into five categories. First of all, administer the agency, and this is typical, the providing the staff, the tools in order to execute the programs of the MPO. It also includes the coordination efforts with the other adjacent MPOs. Engaging the public is really a very important part of the planning process. It's stressed by the federal government and all of the statutes that back it up. Melissa's here, and I just want to recognize that last year, every 4 years, the federal government comes down and they go through a complete review of everything you've done, and they actually recertify the MPO. There was a notable practice for the MPO public participation team on how they go into the community. They go to events, they partner and leverage city funds and go to Sunfest and other events in cities, and are constantly trying to educate the public on what the MPO is. I think you'll probably know as well as us that not a lot of people in the community know what the MPO is and what it does and how important it is. And getting that word out is really important. So this section includes all of those work type activities for the next 2 years. Planning the system, this is the biggest category there is. This goes all the way from the long range transportation plan process. And actually, this 2 year program, you will be starting up your 2045 plan. Right now, I think you're working on validating the next transportation model for the year 2045, and then approving the socioeconomic data. There was a lengthy discussion this morning about the socioeconomic database. That reflects all of the development approvals that are going on in the community and projecting out to 2045. Summer of 2017, you'll be beginning that process. Programming the funds. This is every year you have to create a new transportation improvement plan where you identify your priorities and you program the funds for design, construction, etc. Improving the experience, this is where you measure the effectiveness. Your congestion management plan is a program where you identify how much congestion has been reduced in a year, are there increased bicycle riders or pedestrian utilization in the community, But improving the experience, I like this theme, and Renee and Nick brought this up, and we identified it because it's also stressing the need to improve the types of projects that are implemented, complete streets projects, assuring pedestrian bicycle facility communities' connectivity with transit. And so we would ask that, you know, you all could focus on this area if you have any thoughts on planning activities that these could be included. The schedule, right now we're going to be, and we don't have a quorum, but I guess the recommendation was to move it to the board so that they could transmit the draft to the federal government and FDOT so that they could do their review. In that time frame, the document will be open for comments through April and May. We need to complete the document for the board's agenda package, get it to the board in June, again, because come day one, July 1, the document needs to be in effect. So we'll be back here again, but have an opportunity to comment. Renee is the key point of contact. You can email her or phone call her. The website under the form section is actually a pop-up that you can fill out and identify some potential work activities. And with that, we'll open it up for questions.
Any questions from the members? I do have one question from an absent member, which was why was the increase in cost of task three from 2017-2018, and I had said that it's because of the starting of the 2045 plan. That's when you said summer 17 is when that begins.
You're absolutely right. It was $300,000 additional funding to program, get ready for the long range transportation plan.
Okay, we'll work with the minutes for Myron's benefit, so that's taken care of.
Maybe running out, you know, the last December, the federal government finally passed a new transportation bill, the FAST Act, and it also identified a 5% increase in funds for this year and next year, which you're not looking at last year's budget, so there's an extra 5% of funding for your FAST 2 plan.
Okay, great. Any questions?
Cool.
You've been through this a couple times before. We started with it streets policy.
So it's my pleasure to introduce Stuart Robertson from Human Horn Associates to present this item. Valerie Nielsen is our transit coordinator. She's the MPO project manager and we're assisting in fielding any questions. Stuart?
Thank you very much, Renee. Members of the Citizens Advisory Committee, my name is Stuart Robertson with Kimley Horn. It's my pleasure to present the revised complete streets policy for the MPO. Complete Streets essentially is an approach to planning, designing, constructing, and maintaining our streets and roadways that begins to balance out the transportation system for all modes, including pedestrians, bicyclists, transit users, and motorists, to a situation where it is more evenly balanced in terms of the facilities that are provided. So with Complete Streets, you could expect to find things like more connected sidewalks, more crosswalks, bicycle lanes, opportunities for convenient and comfortable waiting areas for bus patrons, things like that. Things like the image that is shown here would portray. What are the reasons that we are interested in Complete Streets and transportation? One is related to safety. The data show that Palm Beach County is one of the highest counties within the state for pedestrian and bicyclist fatalities. There are national data that show that the Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach urbanized area is fourth in the nation in per capita pedestrian fatalities. So there's a focus on safety within the transportation community because of these fatality numbers. There's also a need to help balance out the transportation modal split in order to improve the efficiency of the network. When I say modal split, I'm talking about the share of trips that are made by various different means of transportation. Right now, the 78% piece of the pie for work trips are for the drive-alone category. This data comes from the Census Bureau that collects information on the journey to work trip through their American Community Survey product. And walking, public transportation, and bicycle are all relatively small, between 1 and 2% of work trips. There are some data that show that for all trips combined, not just the work trip, that those percentages are a little bit higher, but still relatively small and in the 5% or so range. And so providing a more balanced approach to the various modes would help to improve the efficiency of the system. There are also broader social goals that can be achieved with a complete streets approach. Things like supporting the local economy. There are evidence-based studies that show that complete streets within town center areas bring a greater economic value to the community. Promoting physical activity, which helps to address some of the modern ills, such as hypertension disorders, obesity, and also reducing emissions, helping with community resilience and sustainability from these greener transportation modes. Many jurisdictions within the state of Florida, as well as nationally, have adopted some form of a complete streets policy, so this is not necessarily something that has started with Palm Beach County, but participating with other jurisdictions around the state and around the nation. This slide just presents some, oh sure, Glenn.
Yeah, better look at that slide previously. Absolutely. Are we, is Palm Beach County on there yet? No.
We haven't adopted it yet. So
okay.
Yeah, not yet, but the city of West Palm Beach does appear on the list. They have a streets policy. Yeah, good question. So some of the information here that's presented here shows the development of the policy. In its draft format, the policy was first presented back in September to the Technical Advisory and Citizens Advisory Committees of the OMPO, as well as Bicycle Greenways and Pedestrians, as well as to the OMPO Board. Since that initial round of presentations to develop feedback, there have been workshops for stakeholders. There have been a working group that has established and is meeting on a monthly basis to help guide as well as implement the results of what this policy will become when adopted. And then the revised Complete Streets draft has been prepared and is now being presented through the MPO Advisory Committee process. The purpose of having a Complete Streets policy, in addition to those broader vision goals that we saw earlier, but basically from a practical standpoint, it is to accommodate the safety and convenience of all transportation system users into all the various phases of a project's development. Again, from planning, through design and construction, and I would also even consider the development review process as part of that as well. Providing a framework for the creation of a connected complete streets network. A recognition within the policy that every trip begins with a pedestrian trip, whether you're parking your car on street and going into the local shop or restaurant, whether you're walking from your home to a bus stop. We all are pedestrians every day, regardless of the primary mode that we're using for a trip. And then finally, to establish transportation user considerations, which is essentially a hierarchy of the decision-making process that would begin with our most vulnerable user type. So the largest circle that you see there would be the pedestrians as the most vulnerable user type. And proceeding through with bicyclists, transit users, commercial vehicles are a separate category as well. When we start thinking about things like the need to providing space for deliveries, especially within downtown or town center type areas, and certainly motorists and personal vehicles as well. So essentially the policy statement describes the what and the how. The MPO aims to achieve a safe and convenient transportation network by implementing complete streets within the context of our county's diverse communities. Complete Streets in Boca Raton may not look the same as they do in Riviera Beach. They respond to the context of the community. And then the second statement here is kind of the how the LPL will go about implementing its form of the Complete Streets policy. And that will occur by prioritizing funding of projects toward Complete Streets infrastructure, providing educational opportunities to both stakeholders as well as local government partners, and encouraging those local government partners to adopt and implement their own local Complete Streets policy, as we have seen the city of West Palm Beach already has. And for an implementation agency like a city or a county government, their policy might look different than the LPO's policy just because of the purview of that agency as an actual implementation agency rather than just the planning agency for federal transportation dollars. Complete Streets are consistent with the LPO's goals and objectives that were established in the long-range transportation plan. And it also includes a concept called Vision Zero, which is essentially recognition that no level of fatalities are inevitable or acceptable within the transportation network. And so we're striving to have a fatality-free transportation network. That's essentially the Vision Zero type philosophy, and it's really the foundation for the Complete Streets policy and ending traffic deaths on our streets and roadways. There are performance measures related to achieving targets for mode share. You can kind of see in this table the current value, which is from that pie chart that we saw earlier. Performance measures have been established in order for the LPO to track and gauge over time the effectiveness of beginning to focus on this type of an approach. Also, performance measures relating to increasing the number of local jurisdictions that have adopted Complete Streets policy. This obviously is not under the control of the LPO, but it is something that working with local government partners could have some level of encouragement over. And then providing annual workshops and events to promote Complete Streets and raise awareness, the first of which was held in December of last year, and the LPO is looking to continue to step up the numbers of educational workshops. As I mentioned, the LPO's Complete Streets policy will be applicable within its purview, which is essentially state and federally funded transportation projects that are prioritized through the LPO's processes, which include the long-range plan, and then the five-year work program, which is the TIP. There are project exemptions considered on a case-by-case basis for things like scenarios where right-of-way constraints or other physical challenges may restrict the ability to provide these types of facilities. So where we are in the process is essentially presenting the revised policy to the LPO committees, going toward the LPO board later this month. The LPO Complete Streets Working Group is continuing to meet. March 22nd is the next group of that. It's really a great way of being able to develop the policy, but also work with the local agencies and build that consensus toward being able to implement the elements of the Complete Streets policy, not only with the LPO, but also with the local stakeholders who really are the implementation partners of this. That wraps up the presentation that I've had. I would be happy, and I'm sure Valerie would too, to address any questions or comments that you may have regarding the policy.
Any questions? Presentation, you said that were the fourth highest in the state fatalities of pedestrian and bicycle. 30 years ago, when the county created their master transportation plan, roadway sections, right of way, etc., which is now pretty much built in most areas, there's sidewalks on both sides of the streets, and there is an effort made toward making all the streets pedestrian. a lot of accidents when children going to school in dark hours and periods like that, or the typical. But obviously, the policy is a good one. How do you really get it down when you just have the statistical? You're just going to have a certain percentage.
Yeah. What I would offer from my perspective is that it shows that there's a need to not only provide those base facilities, but to go to an additional level of detail in certain contexts. Yes, we have provisions for sidewalks and bike lanes, but maybe we need to have provisions for more frequent crosswalks within downtown type areas. Sometimes some of our transportation rules and regulations are kind of in conflict with each other because we want to have a certain signal spacing on arterial roadways for progression and flow. And that means that pedestrians have to walk farther to get to the nearest signalized crosswalk to be able to cross the street. And so it's situations like that where in the future we may need to begin drilling down to a greater level of detail and making a decision about providing maybe a mid-block crosswalk where it otherwise would not have been provided with the signal control that the pedestrian could use to cross. And so I think maybe that level of detail is what would be coming up next over, you know, the next 10 years or so when we look at really beginning to implement this plan that may have not yet been tried with the transportation master plans of the past. You mentioned the lighting. That's a major issue with pedestrian fatalities, is that early morning hours and also just after sundown as well, when people are still going to school, going to work, needing to be out for transportation, but low visibility is a major factor when it comes to pedestrian crashes and pedestrian fatalities. We actually see a spike just before sunup and just after sundown in pedestrian fatalities, so it clearly is because of that.
It's lighting aspect. It's going to get worse, too. Everybody has a phone or some kind of digital device operating in the car or the screen. And
yes.
I think it's getting... You're seeing it. I mean, I'm a biker, and I can't tell you how many close calls you get. It's like scares you to death anymore.
Yeah, I think the close calls are increasing because of that distracted driver phenomenon where they're on their phone and swerving more than they used to.
Sorry.
No problem.
So I would also add that in addition to engineering solutions, we need to look at education and enforcement as well. So if the bicyclists are not behaving as a vehicle, they, you know, we need some enforcement or some education to teach, you know, bicyclists how to behave in traffic.
Well, the police used to come.
As well, yes.
Police used to come to the schools, the elementary schools, and teach the kids. I'm one of them. How to cross? How to ride your bike? Where to ride your bike? What to do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I don't know if they still do that. I assume they do.
We're trying to. Some police. There are some programs out there, and there's Safe Kids, and there's different programs. But we're trying, at the MPO, we're trying to really kind of push that and push momentum. We participate in the community traffic safety team with police, and several communities are doing their own, you know, initiatives. Like Delray had an initiative where they cited or they gave out like 1,000 warnings to people, pedestrians and cyclists not behaving right, and then they issued tickets. But kind of educating people, and then we participate on the Safe Routes to School Committee with the schools that recently started up again, where we're trying to implement or promote schools to educate and implement free bicycle and pedestrian curriculums in the schools, just like as Miami has a, you know, all schools have to teach pedestrian safety, walk safety in every school every year, and they've seen a decrease in like 70% of over the last 10 years of children being admitted to hospitals.
Seems like there's an educational component. This is very large compared to the engineering.
Yeah, the educational component have been shown in other studies to be far greater than the engineering component in terms of its ability to really reach people and their behavior when they're out using the streets. And so the reduction in juvenile fatalities in Miami-Dade is a great case study from the Walk Safe program that went in the early 2000s. Like Valerie said, 70% reduction in juvenile pedestrian engineering solution that we've been able to achieve a 70% reduction in problems.
Yeah, and that was coupled with Safe Routes to School infrastructure improvements as well, and funding to improve,
I was just going to, connecting this to the UPWP, it's an excellent question, and I think one thing, also when you think of, I guess what we didn't see is, Florida is the worst state in the country, so when you're looking at the 10 worst counties, you're thinking of the worst state in the country. The situation is pretty dire, but the growth that has happened here in 30 years, and with pedestrians and bicycles, nobody really has a handle on how many people are doing it. Like when you can look at car accidents, we pretty much know on every road how many cars are using the road, laying the tubes down, et cetera. But you don't know, say you had a 2% increase in serious injuries on bicycles, but 5% more people were riding bicycles. It looks like you failed because you don't know that number. Your UPWP identifies efforts to expand your pedestrian count program. The online grant, you're counting at 50 locations every year, so now we're going to continue doing that and make it broader, so then perhaps you'll be able to look at numbers and say, we're growing. If this is really successful, your pedestrian bicycle use will grow. If you have a smaller growth rate in fatals and injuries, you are having some success. So that's another part of the equation that can be answered through activities that are allowed in the UPWP.
One question. You have a working group. What's their objectives? What are their goals? And who are they? And how do they operate?
So we've really only met so far once, and it was kind of a follow-up to the first. We had a National Complete Streets workshop that was basically first we met at our MPO board, and then it was limited to 40 seats because it was a kind of like a class to educate on what complete streets are, and then we had a follow-up to that, which was this working group meeting, to get input on our complete streets policy, and it was people from all our committees or anybody and everyone who wanted to join. So we have people from Department of Health, people from the schools, people from Engineering, Planning Department, from our committees, open to really anyone who wanted to provide feedback. So we had one meeting, and it was to get feedback on our complete streets policy, but out of that meeting, the group said, we want to have an ongoing meeting, a monthly meeting, where we want to decide, like keep this going and really keep pushing complete streets onto for our local communities to adopt their own policies. So at our next meeting, we're going to discuss more of that, like what are the goals of this group, what are we going to be doing moving forward, and so forth. So Broward MPO has a complete streets working group, or it's actually at this point, it's an advisory committee, just like at the same standing as a TAC or CAP, and they, at every meeting, they give kind of an update, the MPO gives an update on what its efforts they're doing, and then the group, the local municipalities, update on their successes or their initiatives that they're doing to promote complete streets, and then there's a presentation and things like that. So just to really keep the ball moving forward.
Oh, okay. Because we're a little unique, because we're a, we're called COBRA, which is 50 square miles between Lantana, Flagler, city limits of Boynton Beach, and we're interested in this. If you can give me your card or an email, send me an email about it. Our growth management committee has started to think about this in relationship to a project that are being brought to us. So if you're interested in it, we operate like a municipality without being in this.
And our next meeting, as Stuart said, and we'll send you an email, is on the 22nd of March at 10 a.m. here in this room. So.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you. So do we need a consensus? Call. Consensus vote. Consensus vote is unanimous. Or recommending adoption.
here's an odd thought. They're my client. Am I allowed to have to recuse myself when I vote on it?
We're not voting, so.
But you can consent on it? I can, sure. I can consent to it.
Okay.
I would think so.
So we have a consensus, one abstain. Recuse. Okay. Information items. Item 3A and A, B, and C. 3A is meter challenge update.
So Valerie Nielsen, our engine coordinator, will present this item. So I'm back with an update on this, on the meter challenge. This is our website of the meter challenge. There is no more countdown because it started yesterday. So this is a we're off to a really great start. As I've shown before, we have a billboard that looks like this. It's actually up on I-95 southbound off Atlantic Avenue. And then we have one of our partners in the Palm Trend, so we have a bus route on the Palm Trend bus running on the most popular route along US 1, Route 1, promote the challenge. This is the picture of the billboard. It's up, so keep an eye out. If you haven't tried Transit app, check it out. It's a really user-friendly app to plan your trip from Palm Beach County all the way to Miami-Dade County if you'd like, but it has all the real-time information available to make your connections across different transit routes, and also shows Uber as an option, provides Skybike, any options that are available. It's you can check out as an option to plan your trip. So again, this is a county-wide competition between places of work. So we're trying to really reach out to people that not every day bike or walk to work, but really get a team momentum going on between places of work. And any trip made from work within or to from Palm Beach County counts, and it has to be made by alternative modes, by not driving alone. So transit, carpool, walking, biking, or other non-motorized. So when someone signs up and creates a team from the place of work, it asks you how big is your employer, how big is your business? So that way, it's kind of like a game, and we have businesses within similar employer size competing against each other. So a Costco against Office Depot versus a local coffee shop and a fabric store, things like that. So it's kind of like there's a competition going on between business categories. So far we have 38 teams that have signed up. We're on day two, and four of them are city teams, so employees from the city of Boca Raton, city of Delray Beach, city of West Palm Beach, and village of Palm Springs. And I just checked right before this meeting, and we are at 1,450 miles just on day two taken by alternative modes with 645 pounds of CO2 saved. So we're really off to a great start. Yes?
You can add 25, because I was just okay,
so
you
really yesterday. Carpool today and yesterday, so we're up even further. This was again right before I came to this meeting, so this is the breakdown. So when you click on business size categories, you'll see the list of the businesses or the teams under each category, but this is the totals. So in total, these are the miles that have been made between yesterday and today since the challenge started. We're going to be doing a celebration culminating event on April 2nd from 9 to 11 in downtown West Palm Beach at the Waterfront Commons on Flagler Drive. So we're closing off the street, and this is going to be not only a celebration of the people that participated and the winners, but also it's really the purpose is to educate the public and teach them about transit, our transit program partners, and about walking and biking safely. So we hope to catch some of these Saturday market folks that go to the West Palm Beach market and attract them over to our event. So we're going to be doing the orange box is where Palm Trans bus is going to be, the Premier Challenge bus I showed. That's going to be parked there so people can learn how to dock their bike, learn about Palm Trans. We'll also have a safe walking simulation. So WalkSafe is going to come and do that. Safe Kids is going to be doing helmet fitting for kids, for adults, teaching them about that.
just all kinds of partners, software and services with Carpool, and Skybike is one of our partners too, so people can test out bike share. During the event, we're going to have transportation scavenger hunt, so you have to go and there's going to be these stamps for each mode of transportation that are going to kind of hop around between the different information educational booths, and you have to collect all 5 stamps and then turn it into the Palm Beach MPO table to enter a raffle and get a goodie bag. So it's another way to motivate people to come visit our booths and learn about transportation. So the prizes are going to be the top team from each of the business size categories is going to get a certificate and a $100 gift card. The top commuters will get prizes, gift cards, as well as in goodie bags. And simultaneously, we have a challenge going on with the schools that they're organizing, where kids are tracking their miles for walking and biking, and we're going to recognize these top 3 schools and top 3 students at this. And then again, the raffle prizes. So this is just a kind of a snapshot. We're working on finalizing the flyer, but we have some prize sponsors, and then our partner activities that I mentioned already, the Helmet Fitting Bus Expo, and we're going to do a family bike ride, and lots of great things. So hope you guys come out. Mark, save the date, and as I mentioned, we have several outreach efforts happening right now, but we really appreciate your help. If you know of any businesses or anybody that might be a good candidate to spread the word and participate, we put about a bunch of flyers out at the sign-in table, so please take some and share it in the newsletters and websites, post on social media, hashtag Community Commuter Challenge, and participate in events throughout the month, which Greg's going to talk about more, but any questions?
And I just wanted to point out and ask everybody to watch Channel 5 for the news today, because we aren't sure which newscast, but they did do an interview today with one of the team members from the City of West Palm Beach team, who's also one of our TAC members, Alex Hansen, and they have a new newscast beginning at 4 o'clock, I think it is. I think it's called The Now. And I'm going to guess they may put it on there and then rerun, because that's more softer news segments, not election coverage. So you never know. And a lot of times things are on the evening broadcast. You'll see again the following morning if you have to watch news early in the morning. So tonight, maybe tomorrow morning early, please consider watching Channel 5 and look for that.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Valerie. Okay, other information on Florida Bike Month update.
So I would like to introduce Fran Taylor, our Bike Ped PDM coordinator. She's going to present this item for you.
Hello, good afternoon. And once again, happy Florida Bike Month. As you probably already know, Bike Month has been celebrated nationally since 1956. Here in Florida, we celebrated in March because the cool weather usually prevails. But we also have the opportunity to celebrate it with the rest of the nation in May. This year, we challenged all of our communities and citizens to participate in a few different ways. So I'm going to go over a few of the types of ways that we challenged you all and how people are responding. So one thing that we asked was that everyone create a Florida Bike Month proclamation. And so here's a roll call. The municipalities or jurisdictions that actually answered the call. Palm Beach MPO, Palm Beach County, the town of Jupiter, the city of Boca Raton, the village of Tequesta, and I've learned of just this morning, the city of Delray Beach. So I just wanted to kind of highlight to you, in case you haven't used this as a resource yet, we have bikepalmbeach.org. It's our website connected to our main page. You can go there for events on our events calendar. There are also additional resources such as safety tips for bicycles and cyclists and pedestrians, as well as facility maps so that you can know what type of facilities are kind of the more safer facilities and what we're planning for the future. What I want to highlight specifically here is our Bike Palm Beach calendar. And I'll show you a couple of key events. But feel free, if at any point you know of any biking events, you can actually add to our calendar listing. So I just wanted to point that out to you. So this is a snapshot of what our calendar looks like as of today. I'm just going to review a few events. Luckily, we have kind of the good problem of having a few events on the calendars
will. I do want to point out that for each of the events that you see in each day, you can click on the posting for additional information. The events that I'll cover today or talk a little bit more about are the Bike to Work Week in West Palm Beach, the Westgate Bike Rodeo, the Boca Raton Florida Ride, and there's also an Alert Today, a Live Tomorrow event in Lake Worth. So the first event that I'll kind of talk about is the Vice Mayor Valachet is committing to do a 11-mile ride from the North County Courthouse all the way down to West Palm Beach downtown, which is about 11 miles. This is actually in celebration of the culmination of West Palm Beach's Bike to Work Week. So on that last day, on that Friday, from 8 to 9, he'll be biking from the courthouse to downtown and he'll also have a few pickup spots. One of those spots will be Kelsey Park, which is about 6 miles into the ride, and then Curry Park, which is about 3 miles into the ride. So feel free to look at the website for more information, and if you'd like to join, I know, Greg, you mentioned that here at Cyprus. So another event that I wanted to point out is March 19th. On Saturday, from 10 to 12, we'll have a bike rodeo and helmet fitting. This is also in conjunction with their grand reopening. They've had some new amenities added to the park, so they're happy to kind of showcase those new facilities. I believe Commissioner Taylor will also be present that day. Last year, we went out to the same event. Melissa can actually attest. We had about 50 kids come out, receive new helmets, go through the bike obstacle course so they can get more confident with their biking skills. And they had a really good time. So those are a few pictures that you can see from the event last year. We'll also have a worry market out there and some health screenings for the parents. So it's a really good community event. Another event, which is happening on the same day, is the Boca Raton, Florida Bike Month Ride. So that's going to happen starting at Meisner Park and kind of looping around the city back to Meisner Park. Our MPO board chair and mayor of Boca Raton, Susan Haney, will participate in the celebratory ride, so that's going to be a really good showing. This event is in conjunction with CBS News 12, their health and wellness experience. This is the third annual event, so they've added kind of the bike ride to have a more holistic and participatory element to the event. And the last event that I wanted to show to you today is the Alert Today, a Live Tomorrow event. This will be on the corridor, or along the corridor of Lake Worth Road, near the intersection of Davis Road, which is more informally known as the swap shop area. There's a lot of high pedestrian activity in that location, and unfortunately a lot of accidents in that location as well for pedestrians and cyclists. So we're partnering up with the Florida Department of Transportation, as well as the local police force, and several other entities to go out and have an outreach program. We'll have information in various languages to kind of talk to the population there and see what if they are familiar with some of the safety aspects that are along the roadway. We've come to learn that there's a pedestrian push button that can connect pedestrians from one side of the street to the other, but a lot of pedestrians aren't using that push button to get across the road safely. So that's one of the things that we want to kind of engage in, and also directing people to bike with traffic. That was also part of the conversation that we had this morning. So I just wanted to highlight some of those events and kind of encourage you to join in our celebration. Again, we have the Bike Month calendar up so that you can kind of figure out what might suit you and kind of join in our celebration. So our last call to you is, what are you doing to celebrate Florida Bike Month?
Any questions? Last information item are the summary points to the February 18th MPO board meeting. Do you have any questions, concerns, comments? Okay, seeing none.
Administrative items. Any member comments? Okay, seeing none. Next meeting is April 6, 2016. Hopefully, we'll have a forum. And consensus to adjourn?
Consensus.
So seen.